Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fundraising Masters for November. Today, we are focused on executive directors and fundraising. What's your role? I'm Brian Saber, president of ASCII Matters, and I'm really delighted to be talking on this topic today. Some of you know I did serve as an executive director twice. Once, I was the only fundraising staff person. There were only two other staff who had nothing to do with fundraising, and I had to do it all. And the second time, I had a staff of 4 to 5 people in my fundraising department. It was a larger organization. So I've seen it from both ends. I've worked now with hundreds of executive directors over the years, and of course with boards and with development director. So I think I've got a really good sense of what this is all about and what to share with you to help shed some light on this, put it in perspective, so forth. And I'm doing this because when I did my workshop this fall, and I know a lot of our new members are on today, we had a lot of executive directors in the Don't Ask, Don't Get workshop asking a lot of questions on this topic. And I know a number of executive directors, many, at least 50 or 75 are members of ASCII Matters, and I wanted to make sure to touch on this. So I really am glad to have you with me today. A little housekeeping before we start for those of you who are new. I hope you're seeing a control panel on the right. If not, click on that orange and white button to expand it. If you're having any audio issues during the hour, toggle back and forth between computer audio and phone call. You'll get a telephone number to call in. Almost 100% of the time that issue is on your end. Once in a while it's a GoToWebinar issue we'll try to correct. And second is the questions box, and I will be asking you a bunch of questions during our hour together, and you'll be able to type them in there, and I really encourage you to ask questions all along the way. You will get a link to a recording of this and a PDF of the slides, and there's also a bonus material, and that will all come to you tomorrow. So again, I'm a big fan of questions all along. I will answer as many as I can. If there are any left, you can always email me with anything you think about after today's webinar. So just so I have a sense of who's on the line today, I'd love you all to type in your position and how many fundraising staff there are in your organization. So what is your position? Are you an executive director, director of development, development staff, board member, another position? And how many fundraising staff do you have in your shop? And so I'm seeing Anne's philanthropy director and has 4 fundraising staff. Esther's director of development with 2.5 other staff. Kemi, you're an executive director and you've got 2 other staff. Linda. So we've got a number of you with other staff. We've got Amanda, executive director, no other staff. So we've got a wide range here. It looks like many people have 2 or 3, a number of you with none. So we've got a range of people in a range of positions. So I'm mostly going to be talking about the executive director and his or her role, but there will be times where I'm talking in a sense about what the director of development needs to do to support the ED or what the board might also need to do to support the ED. So hopefully we're going to cover everything on your mind. This is a new webinar, so a new topic for me. I've spent a lot of time developing it, but I want your feedback, and if there's anything I'm not covering that you want me to cover, please chime in. So thank you everyone for sharing your position and what your situation is. So, okay, we're going to start by talking turkey. What is this about? So I know as well as anyone that you are really busy, that you have 1,000 things on your plate, and you are just trying to keep all those plates up in the air. As a matter of fact, I tried to get the perfect image of all those plates. I couldn't find the right one. So I went with this, which is sometimes how we feel as executive directors because there is so much happening. But here's the kicker. If you don't help fundraise, you won't be able to afford the 1,000 things on your plate anyway. Right? You need money to do all those other things that are on your plate. And to the extent you raise more money, it's going to make all the other things on your plate easier to do, easier to accomplish. And that does mean making some difficult, in fact, painful choices about how you spend your time, how your executive director spends his or her time. As executive directors must clear their calendars for fundraising, no matter how much fundraising staff you have. Further, the truth of the matter is that development jobs are more of a revolving door. The average tenure for a fundraising job is under 2 years, and this isn't going to change. This is our reality. You can change it a bit through some of the management tools we're going to talk about later on if you do have fundraising staff, in terms of how to manage them and to be more productive. But if you want a strong relationship with donors, you as an executive director, it depends significantly on you, because you're likely to be there for much longer and will provide the consistent relationship donors need to be engaged. And last but most important, you're in a unique position, right? You, an executive director, oversees all the programming, has a deep knowledge of every facet of the organization, right? Understands the relationships on every level, and really serves as the voice of the organization. That means lots of people want to hear directly from you, inside and out of the organization. In fact, everyone does, though an executive director has to set parameters, and we're going to talk about how we set those parameters later, because everyone wants a piece of you, right? Everyone's tugging you. Everyone says, can you show up here? Can you do this? Can you speak to this person? So while you can't be the only person who cultivates and solicits gifts, no matter what the size of your organization, there's no way around the fact that you need to be on the front line of fundraising, and we'll talk about this later, doing so also sets an example for everyone else. So simply put, you are the chief fundraiser. If you have a vice president or director of development, whatever, you are still the chief fundraiser for the organization. And that means you've got four important roles: developing fundraising strategy, and we're going to talk about each of these, managing important donor relationships, setting expectations for board members and working with them to fulfill those expectations, and setting expectations for staff and working with them to fulfill those expectations, right? So you're in this position if you have any fundraising staff or any staff who are going to help you with fundraising, of having to manage up and manage down. You're managing in both directions. So let's talk about these four roles. Let's start with developing fundraising strategy. So if you have fundraising staff, they're going to be very involved here. But they're still going to need your input, because you've got this perch where you can see all the moving pieces, all the strengths, all the challenges of the organization, all the resources you have at hand. And you're going to hand something down probably to your fundraising staff if you have it. The most important thing I can say here, because I have faced this a number of times personally and as a consultant, is this: no plug numbers. And here's what I mean. Just because you need $100,000 doesn't mean it's feasible. And an executive director should never give the fundraising staff what I call a plug number, meaning we want to do this much programming. It's going to cost $500. We see where $400 of it is coming from. Here I wrote program income. There could be other resources, earned income, some investment income, whatever it is. And then there's what's left to be raised, right? So we have a hole of $100,000. That's what we need to raise. This has to be an iterative process. If you need to raise significantly more, that will often mean either more of your time, more board member involvement, or more paid staff. And that's a call you need to make with input from everyone else. And eventually, it's something everyone has to agree to. But I would say that the executive director is most responsible for managing this balance of what we need and what is possible. So as you're developing a fundraising strategy, you need to think of, where might the funds come from and what will it take? Right? Are we using our resources wisely? One of the most important things you can do with your with fundraising staff or on your own if you don't have any, is really analyze how effective all of your fundraising efforts are. Those of you who've been with Asking Matters for a while know that I harp on this when it comes to special events, where we always spend more time and money than we thought we would, than we think we do, and we need to analyze what the return is. But what is the return of each effort we're making in fundraising? And that's an analysis that I feel executive directors must be a part of. You know, do you have the right resources to accomplish what you need to accomplish? We can't be penny wise and pound foolish about fundraising. Right? We need to have the right resources. So Kim says, any examples of metrics for assessing return on investment on fundraising investments? Well, it depends on the size of your organization, Kim. So if you're a larger organization and you've got some one person whose distinct responsibility is major gifts, then you know, the lowest threshold is that the person's got to bring in more than he or she costs. If it's an $80,000 a year position, then that person has to show that he or she is bringing in more than $80,000. That's sort of the easiest one. And preferably a lot more. If it's only a little bit more, you know, with all the other hidden costs, it might not be worth it. So maybe that person needs to bring in twice what they're costing, or something like that. When it comes to a fundraising event, you need to look at all the direct, all the indirect costs. I also say you've got to look at what part of that income your board was responsible for, because often those board members would write their checks directly to the organization without the special event. So you might have grossed $100,000, you might have netted $70,000, but when you take out the board gifts, you've only netted $40,000, and then you have to say to yourself, okay, was all that work worth $40,000? And what might we have done with that time? Let's say it took us 200 hours. How could we have spent those 200 hours more efficiently? Is there a way in which we could have done that? So, as a matter of fact, Kim, this is a great question, because next month, in just 3 weeks, Amy Eisenstein is going to be our fundraising master, and she's going to talk about metrics. So everyone should make a point of signing up for that, and at the very end, I'll flash that on the screen and give you more details. She's great on metrics, which is why I'm bringing her back to Asking Matters. She's done some fundraising masters for us before. And what training is required? You all know I'm very big on training. We can't do this without any. Towards the end, we're going to talk about training for executive directors. You need to be aware of what training your board might need, and to help make that happen, and what training your fundraising staff might need. And you need to be sensitive to the fact that they need it if you have fundraising staff and fundraising staff come to you. And if you're a director of development or other listening today, you should continue to beat the drum for that training. So, next, managing important donor relations. So I'd love you to type in how many hours each week you, if you're the ED, or your ED if you're not, can devote to cultivating donors and soliciting gifts. This would be both individual and institutional. How many hours a week do you think you or your executive director, if you're not one, could spend on cultivating donors and soliciting gifts? One person says, not nearly enough, can never be enough. And that's why we've got to do some analysis, and we're going to share that with you now. I'm saying 5 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours. Melanie, that's interesting. You upped your number. Melanie Cohn is from the Visual Arts Center, is also a client of mine. She runs the Visual Arts Center in New Jersey. Some of you may know her. And when we got together last week, she said 3. And I am delighted to hear that just from our discussion, she has raised that to 7. That's excellent, because she is the executive director at the Visual Arts Center. I'm seeing 5 to 10, 2. Again, Sue says not enough. 30-40% of my time, Kim says. We're going to talk about percentage of time. Here's one way to look at this. So I've done a lot of analysis over the years because I've been in so many of these meetings and I've cultivated and solicited so many donors. Each meeting with the donor is going to take somewhere from about 3 to 10.5 hours, depending on how much prep you have, how much travel there is, and so forth. So, and generally, on average, you'll need to meet with donors twice a year. Some will only meet with you once, some 3 or 4 times, more of them just once or twice. On average, I like to say twice. So what does that mean? So if you've got 6 hours per meeting, 2 a year, and a couple of hours for communication, you've got to assume about 15 hours per prospect. So let's say Kemi had said 10 hours, 5 to 10 hours a week. She said 10, Anne said 5 to 10. I used as an example here, 10. So let's say you've got 10 hours a week and you work 48 weeks a year, you get 4 weeks of vacation. I hope you do. You've got 480 hours for this task. At 15 hours a donor, that means you can have 32 active donors as an executive director in what I'd call your portfolio. Now, since all donors aren't active, perhaps you can have as many as 40 current donors, new prospects, and such. And if you're chiefly responsible for cultivating and soliciting your boards for your board members for their gifts, if you're very involved in that, that's going to take a chunk of your time. So you have to be strategic, very strategic about how you use your time. Again, those of you who have been with Asking Matter for a while know what we talk about. What's a major gift? How do you decide what your threshold is? This is extremely important for executive directors. If you're development staff listening to this right now, you need to use your executive directors wisely. Your executive donors and prospects cannot have unlimited access to your executive director. Everyone can't have access. I worked for my alma mater, Brandeis University, for many years in charge of fundraising in the Midwest. It's really where I really learned my major gifts work. And when I first started, they had the president running ragged everywhere around the country. And I'll say I was a bit guilty of this in the Midwest region. He saw way too many people at too many levels. And we had to set a threshold, various thresholds, including for him. Right? At what level of potential gift is his time worthwhile? So you might look, first of all, at this 80-20 rule. We talk about this a lot, that giving is just like anything else. 80% of the gifts are going to come from 20% of the people. Jerry Panis was on our Fundraising Masters just last month and said that for campaigns, it's 90-10. It can even be as high as 97-3. Amazing. So that means you've got to spend your time on the whole organization should truly, on the people who are going to make the biggest difference. And because the executive director's time is so much more limited than, let's say, another fundraiser, you need to be even clearer about how much time that's going to be. So you might have to set a threshold that, you know, looking at the range of gifts at your organization, that your executive director is only going to solicit gifts at a certain level or above. And you might set 2 thresholds. So it might be board members, right? All board members might be on that list. And then here are some guidelines. Maybe institutional funders of 10,000 above, individual donors of 5,000 above. Now, the reason why I have different amounts is because institutional funders will take more work. If you are an executive director and have no other fundraising staff, you're going to be spending a fair amount of time on these institutional funders because you've got to write the proposals and everything yourself. In my first job as executive director, I had to do everything from the research to writing them and the reports and such. So you want to set that threshold higher because institutional funders tend to take more time. So I wonder if you all have thought about this and if you could type in, if you're an executive director or on behalf of your executive director, do you have a threshold? And what is it for individual gifts? Let's set that first for individual gifts. What's the minimum gift you might have your executive director responsible for? If you could type that in. I'm going to read some of those off. So I'm seeing a range. I'm seeing 1,000, 5,000, 500. And Kim says, but we're small. That's a major gift. 10,000 from Anne, 1,000 from Kemi. There's a big range. And Melanie's saying 10, 500 for Sue, because we're small. There's no one magic number. It's going to depend on a lot of things. How much staff you have, how far down that donor list you can go, how involved your board is, how big you are. One thing I want to say, because a number of you are saying we're small, and so 500 really makes an impact. A number of you said that. If there's a conundrum, we're going to talk about it later, in that executive directors of small organizations have to do it all, right, and can only spend a little bit of their time, where in larger organizations where there's more staff supporting you, you can actually spend more time. So in some ways, it's even more important in a small organization to set your sights high to make sure you cover all of those the people, the individuals, and of course institutions at that threshold. And here's an important point for those of you who are executive directors of smaller, probably younger organizations. And it's something I was taught as I was starting Asking Matters, and that is you need to really think about who you want to be and act as much as possible in a way that's going to get you to where you want to be. So let's say right now you have a $100,000 a year organization and $500 seems like a lot of money, but you want to be a $500,000 a year organization. That's going to mean finding a lot of $5,000 donors. And if you continue to concentrate on the people who really only have the capacity for $500, you can't grow. So one of your roles is to really be visionary about the future, not just in a programming sense, because almost all of you as executive directors are in charge of programming. Sometimes there's a separate person, an artistic director or whatever. But for most of you, I know it's you're pushing the organization forward. And so you need to think about what the resources would look like for that organization you envision 5 years from now. Really important point. I think that's going to help some of you set that threshold higher for yourselves, or if you're a director of development, to think through this for your executive director. Hope that all makes sense for you. That's really important, to be strategic from the start about who you're spending your time on, because it is valuable and limited. So now let's talk. Before I get to managing board members, Sue has a question. How does one find larger donors in a rural Midwest area? That's a good question, Sue. There generally are people with capacity everywhere, more in certain regions than others. If you have a small community-based organization in a community that doesn't have affluence, you might need to be relying on more government funders, community foundations, and the like, and less time on individuals. You might simply not have an affluent base to go to. So you need to see what your town is like, bigger than that, your community, and then beyond that. That's a challenging situation, Sue, and sometimes your organization might be limited in size and scope due to the population and the support that it can give you. But I find often that's where some of these institutional funders will come in, when they realize this is really the only revenue stream that's going to get you where you need to go. And Kim just is underscoring this idea of focusing on who we want to be versus who we are. So it really is important, Kim, and I think every day as an executive director, I know what all of you are going through, because we're just trying to keep the lights on. We have a million things we're doing, getting back to keeping the plates going, and it's hard to stop. and think about the future. But that is your job. And to the extent that you do it, because you're the one who's going to do it, then your fundraising will get more expensive to meet it. So now let's move on to managing board members. This is the most challenging part of many executive directors' jobs, managing the board in general, and certainly managing the board's fundraising efforts. And in full disclosure, I want to say that this was the hardest part for me both times I was an executive director, and ultimately I really couldn't be successful on this front for a number of reasons I'm not going to go into, but it turned out I was much better as a second in command supporting my executive director. I had vision, I had a lot of things, but it turned out that working directly for the board was really challenging. So I understand those challenges. I feel your pain for those of you who are struggling. I know this causes strife for many, but the board can be an incredible resource, and the executive director needs to have a significant role there. It starts with board recruitment. It's got to be clear up front. Executive directors must be involved in the recruitment of new board members from the identification through the onboarding. And I'd love you to type in, if you're an executive director or for your executive director, whether the executive director is involved. I feel very strongly that no board member should be nominated without first meeting with the executive director and without the board getting the executive director's opinion and taking that into account. Right? The board has to make the final decision, but the board should not be bringing on a lot of people who the executive director really feels are a bad match. And the executive director needs to be crystal clear when meeting with those board members about what's expected during and after board recruitment. And this is particularly important if your governance committee is not strong and might have a tendency to soft pedal the board's fundraising responsibilities, because you've got to work with these board members and it will be an uphill battle to bring them around if they've had a misunderstanding from the get-go. So I'm seeing now a lot of you have typed in, yes, that you are involved, Kemi's saying on all three levels. Sometimes someone is reporting here that the executive director recommends board members and then it goes nowhere. That is a board governance issue and something that really needs to be addressed at your organization. And someone else saying, I meet with candidates, but when nominating candidates, I met with some skepticism. So there are a few of you who are actually identifying a bit of a rub between you and your executive director role and the board and its role. Executive directors are great at nominating board members because you're meeting everyone. You're the face of the organization. You've got a great idea of who's in your circle of influence, and your opinion should be valued. And if for some reason it isn't, as I said, there is some board governance work to be done. There might be some work to be done in building the relationship between you and the chair of the board. So many of you have said, yes, you are involved. And I hope, so one of the things that you can do clearly is share what the fundraising responsibilities are. I feel that those are the most important responsibilities, maybe not surprising since I'm Asking Matters and I'm all about fundraising, but I do think that that is what tends to be fuzziest and needs to be clarified, and that's a great role for you. I am a massive fan of saying give and get to the best of your ability. If that's not your policy, you may have another. And I dig in deep on this on another webinar, so I can't go into in depth here, but whatever your policy, you need to reinforce it, as board members are more likely to punt on this. And so to me, this means everyone should make a personally significant gift. So assuming you don't have a set amount, like everyone has to give exactly $1,000 or $2,500, it's important for you to underscore that the gift has to be personally significant. And people might say, what do you mean by that? Well, one of your top gifts to any charity, something you really need to think about, something that makes you feel like an investor in the organization. This is perhaps the most important message you can send to someone who's being recruited for the board. Hopefully, board members are saying this, but we know that most boards are in transition, trying to get their boards to give across the board at a personally significant level and be involved in fundraising. So there could be some awkwardness there, board member to board member, but you as the executive director can come out very clearly, articulately, forcefully, and share this so that these potential board members know what they're getting into. I'd also share, we need everyone to help cultivate relationships, everyone to ask for something, meaning volunteerism, in-kind products and services, advice, opening doors and such, and not everyone, but some and hopefully most are going to ask for gifts, and that we're going to provide you the training to do it. We're not just sending you out there. We're going to really help you each step of the way, and we're going to talk about how we do that. So the executive director must work together with board members, and executive directors should expect to spend a significant amount of time with board members. And I don't mean prepping for board meetings and doing all of that support work for a board meeting, but actually working one-on-one and in committees with them. I just saw a recent survey that showed that 55% of EDs spend 10 hours a month or less on board-related activities, and a chunk of that is just focused on getting ready for board meetings. You could easily spend 20% of your time or more managing the board. So I want to talk about five ways of working together. You need to help train people on their role as a board member. Once you need to make sure they get that training. There may be explicitly some training that's supposed to be offered. Your role as the executive director is managing the board along with some key board members, and it behooves you to make sure that your board gets training early on what it means to be a board member. To the extent that your board members get engaged early and get engaged deeply, they're going to give more and they're going to be more involved in fundraising. So this is really integral to your role. So these are donors, but in a much more sophisticated and connected fashion, and therefore they require more cultivation in different ways, and this is one of them. We've got to train them on how to identify, cultivate, and solicit donors. I do an awful lot of this work. Some of this work you can do on your own. If you're members of ASCII Matters listening in today, you know there are a whole bunch of resources to help you, exercises and such. But board members, if you're asking your board to fundraise, you need to be finding ways and helping to train them. And sometimes that might be one-on-one help with those who really have a lot of potential, coaching them individually or working with your development team if you have one to coach them individually. Serve as an active committee member. Right? So you can't just be the note taker at committee meetings. I hope that you have a voice on these various committees on which you sit, and that your other staff, if they sit on other committees, also have a voice. Really important to building the relationship with your board members and helping them to be part of the fundraising program. Meet individually to teach about the organization. I am a big believer that when we onboard new board members, in addition to having a meeting with maybe the chairman or someone else, the head of the governance committee, that each board member should be sitting down individually with the executive director at least once to learn about the organization and probably have some visits with program staff and two programs. And I see the executive director as having a significant role in making sure that happens so that board members are brought up to speed and engaged really early on. And this is an interesting one. So from time to time, there are issues that come up that need that might be difficult, things that need to be wrestled with as a board. And this is an area where to the extent that you as an executive director can meet individually to solidify positions and really make sure board members get to air what's on their minds, you're going to help build the cohesiveness of the board and again help these board members develop a stronger relationship to the organization, which is going to help you in all the work you do. So as you can see, I've listed many things here that don't include getting the minutes ready for the board meeting or working with the chair to get an agenda and things like that, but much more strategic ways of working together. And I want to touch on one other thing here, which we talk about often when we talk about board fundraising, and that is annual review. So, you know, just as the board will review you, there should, in some fashion, we need to be talking with board members about their performance. So sometimes an executive or governance committee will take care of this, and if they do, it will still be helpful for you to be in those meetings or to meet separately, which helps position you as part of the team, not just someone supporting their efforts. It's important to talk about how the year went, how they're feeling, and what their goals are for the coming year. And to the extent that you're involved in this in some way, it's going to be much more strategic in terms of your vision and where you want the organization to head. And this gets right to fundraising, which is so important and so challenging. And by the way, this picture with the wine glasses is intentional because some of those meetings might be best served with something. But I have included as an extra download for those of you who aren't members, a form I've used successfully for many years, a side-by-side board member commitment resource form. It's a mouthful, but it's an opportunity to list in one column everything the board member did this past year, maybe or proposed to do this year, and then what actually happened, or it could be actual for 1 year, and then you fill in proposed for the next. This is a very helpful document to use when you're having meetings with board members. And I'm a big fan of board members leading this process of board member review on an annual basis. I also think it's helpful if executive directors are part of those in those meetings or are giving their input before or after those meetings and somehow have a role. Again, you have the purview, you have the vision, and you can help move it along. So that's how I see a board member managing the board. So let's move on from there to managing staff. So this is assuming that you're not a one-person fundraising shop. We're going to talk about what happens if you are. So you've got to manage other staff who are fundraising. So I want to talk about six items here. First is setting an example. It will be very difficult to get everyone else on your team to get out there to cultivate and solicit gifts enthusiastically and to the extent they can if you as the executive director aren't setting the example and being out there. When we talk about culture of asking at Asking Matters, we talk about the importance of the executive director and the board president or chair being out there fundraising and asking. It's important for you to be out there no matter how talented a director of development is. It can't be left to the director of development. We talked about some of those reasons at the beginning, and setting an example is another important one. By the way, let me step back because Carol had a question about the board. How important it is to have a conversation individually with each board member in advance of a meeting regarding a major vote. Massively important, Carol. Some of you know I've worked for 25 years with Ron Manderscheid at Northwestern Settlement House in Chicago in the Westtown area. And one of the things that Ron has done so well is exactly this, is working with board members individually to answer their questions, to make sure they understand what's going to come before them, not leaving anything to chance, not expecting board members to just understand and grasp it on their own. And I think that's been a good deal, actually, of his success in managing the board and having a really healthy board, that he does exactly that. It is time-consuming. It's an important role. And it feeds into what we're here. We're not talking about general board governance, but this type of work does feed into board giving and board fundraising significantly. So back to managing staff. Set an example is one. Two, be realistic and specific. In a sense, that gets back to no plug numbers, but it's also to just say we need more money. We know that's not compelling to anyone. It's not compelling to the board. It's not compelling to donors. It's not going to be compelling to staff. We need to be realistic, first of all. These have to be numbers we can reach, and they need to be specific, which means being involved in planning, which we'll talk about. You've got to provide training. So many staff, fundraising staff, have no training. There is a false assumption in our field. That's something I've really been focused on lately, because I realize that someone served in a certain role at an organization, and then you hire them to take on a role at your organization. Your assumption is that person's been trained. But that person's been no more trained than the person who leaves your organization and goes somewhere else if you haven't provided training. So sometimes people say, well, why train if someone's going to leave? Well, you can rest assured if you don't train, they're going to leave. And we need to strengthen the field. So penny wise, pound foolish not to spend some money on training. Every field trains. Whether you are a nurse or a bus driver or an accountant or a doctor or teacher, you get training to start. You get ongoing training. And it's important for you in managing your development staff to provide them training. You should, in working together, expect a solid plan. If you have a fundraising team, they need to provide a plan with goals and objectives by category. Okay, we have foundations. How many do we have now? How much are they giving? What are the odds of them giving again this year? What are some new foundations we're cultivating? What do we think we can realistically expect? Who's going to do that? What are the action steps? Okay, now for corporations, same thing. For our special event, what did we bring in last year? Where do we think our sponsors will be? So forth and so on. It should be explicit in terms of who's doing it and the time frame in which it's being done. And that plan should include you as the executive director and board involvement as well. And it needs to be set out in detail in order to be effective. So that is an expectation for you to have. If you are this one-person shop, it's up to you to make that plan. Expect support. If you have fundraising staff, that staff should support you. That staff should train you. We're going to talk about training at the end, but fundraising staff that you have right there in front of you are a great way to get training. So that's important, and you should expect support. You should not be going out to see anyone without having all the proper information, as much information as you can have, all the background, and so forth. You need to know the relationships. It needs to be set up for you. You might need support materials and such. These are all realistic things to expect from a development staff so that you can go out and do the higher level work as an executive director. And last, be a team. This can't be hierarchical. I'm surprised how often, let's say I go to a board meeting and the executive director is sitting at the table and the director of development is sitting in the back. Or even worse, and I really don't understand this, but I've seen it a lot, the director of development isn't invited to the meetings. Well, how do you expect the director of development to work with some of your biggest donors and hopefully best fundraisers if your director of development isn't at the table? It needs to be a team effort, and your director of development if you have one, is going to be one of the most important members of your team and in moving this organization forward. So that's what I see as working together with development staff. So let's talk a little bit about this staff versus solo. Right. So if you have staff, your role is going to be more focused on the overall plan at 20,000 feet, strategizing up to the board, down to the development staff, building those key relationships we talked about, setting an example by being out there, working with the board, managing staff. This is, if you have staff, this is the level at which you're working. Well, if you are what I would call chief cook and bottle washer, you're doing all that plus everything else. Everything falls to you. As I said, I've been in this situation, and that's simply the reality. So we're going to come to time management in a minute and talk about what this means. I think the important point I want to make is that if you're an executive director and you have fundraising staff, you need to be delegating to the staff and not micromanaging, because it's going to get in the way of your doing the higher level work that only you can do, which often is the building of relationships, sometimes asking for those high level gifts, and working with the board. Training. An executive director needs training, and fast. Most of you come with little or no fundraising experience. Most executive directors rise from the program side. And you can either spend the first 5 years learning the job, because it takes a while to learn fundraising, or you can get some immediate training. And I guarantee you, your board is only giving you a couple of months to get up to speed before expecting you to really flourish, and you can't without diving into this area, taking courses, attending webinars, reading books, and so forth. It's an awkward transition, and it can take executive directors a while to fully be comfortable in the role and understand it. You need a crash course if you're fairly new. If you're a director of development and you've got a new ED coming in, help that person get fundraising training in particular. There are other areas where the person's probably going to need training as well if he or she's come from the program area, such as financial management, maybe board management. The fundraising is key to moving anything forward. And learning, learn as much as you can from your director of development if you have one. I think your director of development is your most important partner after your board chair. The director of development has tons of knowledge, can help you manage all those efforts, right? Be that support you need, and make you look good, right? So you should be partnering with your director of development as often as possible to learn from your director of development, so that you're seen as a team that elevates your director of development, which could eventually take some of the burden off of you. As a matter of fact, I've had two long track records, one with my buddy Ron in Chicago, where for 25 years we've been working, and then at Hudson Guild, where I spent 6 years as second in command before becoming ED. And in both those cases, neither of my executive directors, Ron or Janice in New York, had a real track record of fundraising, but they blossomed by partnering with me, believing in me. And what that did was, A, make them look really good, and B, help them not be overwhelmed with the fundraising, because then I had the relationships and could do more than other directors of development can. And we raised more money in both those organizations than they'd ever raised before or imagined. So I really want to underscore, if you've got fundraising staff, the best thing you can do is elevate them and make them your partners. So, last, time management. So let's talk a little bit about this. We already talked about how to figure out how many donors you or your executive director can manage, but everything takes time. So I want to start by saying there's no magic number here. of how much time you should spend overall as an executive director on fundraising. I have seen a whole range of figures, but I believe it's going to be specific to your organization. Having said that, I would say that a minimum of 25% of your time should be spent on fundraising, no matter the size of your organization. If you're small and can't delegate other responsibilities, this might be all you can afford. Though, as I said earlier, the irony is that it's even more important you spend much more time fundraising when it's just you if you want to grow the organization to fulfill your mission. But it is the case. If you're larger and have staff taking care of finances, program, and the like, you'll be able to spend more time. I have heard people talk about spending 80 or 100% of your time. As a matter of fact, I did a training for a national network of organizations, and many of them were complaining that their boards are now saying they expect their CEO to be out 100% of the time. That is simply unrealistic. That is a formula for failure. I've never seen an organization that could do that. No matter how much the executive director delegates, there are going to be a host of things: financial review, human resources, leadership roles in the community, right, going to things, dealing with facilities, that are going to be in your purview, even in the largest of organizations. So I don't see it as 80%. You might be able to get to 50. So at the end of the day, all the responsibility does sit with the executive director to keep the place running. So if things go wrong, it's on your head. So you have to balance that out. But you know that without resources, coming back to what we said at the beginning, you can't fulfill all the other things you're responsible for or see, have a vision for, right? So there is this tug there where the more time you spend on fundraising, the more likely it is you'll fulfill your goals. So I want to close with just a few thoughts on how to be strategic, what being strategic means, and then I want to take some questions. And if you have them, I think I may have answered all the questions that have come in so far. But if you can think of any others, anything I didn't cover, start to type those questions in, and I'll be sure to take them. And as I said, this is a brand new webinar, so I had in my mind, based on my experience, what I thought was important, and getting your feedback will be really helpful, because I will run this webinar again at some point and want to keep building on it. So, ways to be strategic. What has the biggest payoff? We talked about a little bit before in terms of return on investment. Just as you marshal staff to make sure you're making the biggest impact in terms of programming and so forth, you need to look at the fundraising program that way. If you have a director of development who's experienced, that person is going to get this. No matter what, I think it's good for the executive director to ask questions and to help with the analysis to understand where to put the resources and whether it's worth actually bringing in more resources. Right? What will move the organization ahead? That is you, 100% as the executive director. You see what all of these tentacles are, and you can figure out what's going to move the organization ahead fundraising-wise. Should there be another special event or not? Right? How is that going to use resources, and how might those resources be used elsewhere? Like, should we be going after this type of funding or that type of funding? What's the balance between institutional and individual fundraising efforts? And is that mix going to move the organization ahead? A lot of these strategic questions, unless you're in a very large organization with sophisticated development staff, those are going to rest on your shoulder. What can you do that no one else can do? You should be doing the things no one else can do because of your prominence, because of your vision, because of your experience. What can you say no to? Really important. You may be asked right, left, and center for your time. You are a VIP, right? A lot of attention is on you, and people will want that time and will pull you in many directions, certainly on the fundraising front. What can you say no to on the fundraising front that's not strategic, and what else can you say no to that might free up your fundraising time? And the corollary to this is, what can you trust others to do? What's on your plate that others should really be doing? It does remind me of both Ron and Janice, these two relationships I've talked about. When I first started, they were a little reticent when it came to two or three key donors, big donors, and where they were scared that something would happen with the relationship. And it took them a bit of time to then come to trust me. And once they did, those relationships moved significantly to me, and that was very helpful. You need to feel comfortable because the buck stops with you. To the extent that you can trust others, it's going to help you use your time as strategically as possible. And here's the last one, and an important one. What shouldn't you do even though you enjoy it? So I see it, you know, your job should be enjoyable in some way, for sure. Yet at the end of the day, you need to be strategic, and there may be things you're doing because you enjoy them, related to program, related to community events, and whatever it is, that aren't going to move the organization ahead as your fundraising will. So all of that is a trade-off, and I think these are really important questions for you to ask yourself and your team. So that is an executive director and his or her fundraising role. I've got a couple of questions that came in, and that's great, so let me answer them. What about a super hands-on CEO? Ah, he gets out a screwdriver to fix things even though we have a facilities manager. Should I be filling up his time with donor work? Yes. That is exactly what I was just talking about on the last slide. So it's funny that question came in. Your executive director obviously is a fixer-upper, likes hands-on stuff, but that is not his role. You should certainly feel comfortable filling up his time with donor work because you know that his time is not being strategically used. Hopefully over time, if that donor work is successful that the two of you do together, he will be more amenable to doing more of it, which is so important, and he might actually put the screwdriver away. He might still need that for a bit of therapy here and there, but it sounds like he does need to spend his time more strategically, for sure. I'm looking for additional information on board staff dynamic. Right now I'd say that our dynamic is flip-flopped and the board sees me as just another employee. Some board members are difficult and pick choose what they decide to do. If anyone else has that issue, you should type in me too. I have seen that a lot. I will be honest that sometimes the only solution for that, short-term solution, is getting some sort of board governance person in to give an objective 360 about this relationship. If the board sees you as just another employee, then you're not being empowered to do the work. You are the CEO. You are the top staff member. You're the person running this organization day to day who knows it in and out, and you must be empowered to play that role. And if they're being difficult, if they're picking and choosing, that means that the chair of the board may not be doing his or her job, that the governance committee has not made it clear enough to the board members as to what's in their purview or not, that the nominating committee is not being explicit enough when people are brought on board, and this gets back to a role you can play at least with new board members in helping them understand correctly from the get-go what their role is. That's definitely a challenge. It will stand in the way of your success. And you may very well need an objective third party. It might be something you can get pro bono. There are lots of people who work on governance issues generally. though nonprofits are different than for-profits in many ways, there are a lot of people who can facilitate something like this for you, and it sounds like I'd recommend that. Second is, I'm having issues with my current director of development. Over the past 3 years, this person struggled with planning, owning projects, taking charge. What would you recommend for this development director? I would recommend a six-month probationary plan, I must say, where you are very explicit about what will be required. You offer training and assistance to find out why it's not happening and what you might do to support this person. And then you reevaluate. And I would evaluate in 3 months and then at the end of six. If you're not getting the planning, if they're not taking charge and owning their projects, you cannot play your role as an executive director. These are difficult roles to fill, and not everyone is the right fit for an organization. And it is up to you as the executive director to make the hard choice. And it sounds as if you're not getting what you need. I think these are very appropriate things for you to be requesting. And this person may not be able to rise to the occasion, but I would first try and be very explicit about it and set up a six-month remedial plan. That's what I would do. So thank you all for joining me today. I want to remind you that Amy will be with us in just a few weeks, 2 weeks actually, to discuss major gift metrics, measuring for success, and I think this will be something that underscores everything we've talked about today and helps you as an executive director move your major gift program and all of your fundraising to the next level. So I want to thank you for joining me today. I want to wish you all the best with your end of year fundraising. Yesterday was Giving Tuesday, and I hope that went well for you. And I will look forward to being in touch with many of you again in the near future. Thank you so much. Take care.